he has to be extinguished before your nobody becomes a somebody. My name is Matthew Kroll.
And he must become a beast. My name is Shahir Dowd.
And this is the only podcast about movies, specifically the film Monkey Man.
Monkey Man. We are in the presence of a lot of mythology that we're going to have to decipher for this one, because even though I am from India, I felt very nervous about talking about this movie because there's so much mythology, there's so much storytelling involved in this, which is part of a culture that I feel very oddly detached from, despite the color of my skin. So I am very honored to have a guest join us, someone who I've been following for a little while on TikTok right now. I was very excited just to introduce you first off before I give you a formal introduction, because your name is really important in this conversation. Shiv Reddy, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. How are you, first off?
Amazing. Thank you guys for having me. That was a very fun intro. I'm really pumped right now.
Good, good. Mission accomplished.
We get very excited.
Wonderful.
But I came across your profile on TikTok because your name is Chivalry Inc. And I was like, oh, that sounds a lot like my wife's name. And then I was like, oh, this person's a film reviewer who has a similar name to my wife. The first thing I did was show it to my wife. And I was like, hey, there's this film reviewer who's got your name. You should check this out. And I think there was just this lot of... It ends up being something that I think you talk about a lot in terms of representation, that sense of recognition that is hard to find in the film industry for people of minority, BIPOC and minority skins. That sense of like, oh, there's someone else out there other than me who talks about movies in the kind of the way that I do. And I was very excited by that. So I'm very happy you could join us to have this conversation. And just to put it out there, you are a photographer, film content creator, and podcaster who works with a variety of different media, a variety of different companies, and has recently expanded into film and content creation on TikTok, which I think is also where I got to see some of this content, and quite excitedly saw some of your content kind of blow up in the last few months. So that's very exciting to hear and to see. How did you come to... Well, tell us a little bit about your passion for film and television.
Yeah, I'll start with the fact that I have been photographing weddings for a little over a decade now. And anyone that knows what that entails means that I'm spending a lot of time editing, which means I need something to just kind of pass the time. I'm not a big music person. I listen to a lot of like comfort stuff. So that meant that, you know, during this really huge push into streaming, I was watching a ton of TV shows and movies, also watching stuff I've never seen, like Breaking Bad when it came out on Netflix. So it just kind of turned into a thing where I was writing reviews without really calling it that on my Instagram stories and starting discussions with people that were following me for various reasons, for my various hobbies. And it was so much fun just having discussions with people that I have never met ever. And either disagreeing or agreeing with them half the time of like talking about characters that they liked or just themes in the shows that they picked up on. And it really enlightened me to the fact that, you know, maybe this could be a thing. And I just, there was a huge splurge of like brown representation. There's three shows specifically that had like major leading characters that were Indian specifically. And I knew I had to talk about it. So I just started making videos after that.
What were the three shows, just out of curiosity?
Technically, one's not Indian, one's Pakistani, but Bridgerton, Turning Red, yep, which was a Pixar film, yep, that had Mithu Ramakrishnan as an animated voice actor, and then Miss Marvel.
Fantastic. Yeah. A nexus of major important cultural touchstones. And I think maybe kind of like I was identifying, I'm a dad of a young boy, is there's a different landscape now to growing up watching and consuming Western media. When you start seeing people that look like you in Western media, and of course we both grew up watching Bollywood films, so we know that there is a major monolith of culture that we can absorb that has people that look like us. But for me, I grew up in a Western culture, so I'm quite disarmed when I see someone brown in a leading role in a film, or if I see someone's name. There is a character, my wife pointed this out to me, there's a character in some medical show that she watches with a character named Shahir. And I was like, what? No, that's not possible. Like, how is this? There's nobody else in the world called. I've never encountered anyone else in the world called here. There's no way they could be a character on a TV show with that name. So I think it's kind of wonderful when you have that experience of like seeing someone that looks a little bit like you, which is not often represented in Western media. And I'm very excited for my son to be able to watch content and see people that look like him and have his sort of cultural background as well. I'm curious, then the other major thing that happened recently is you were invited to talk to Dev Patel, the subject of the movie that we are going to be discussing on this episode, recently after your trip to South by Southwest. Could you tell us a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, so I know that you guys will understand the struggle of being a creator online. You don't really always get seen by the right people, or you know how much effort you put into your content. It feels like it's just going into a trash can directly. But I've been doing this for 2 years, so I feel like it's still always a learning curve for me. And although I live in LA and I have access to a lot of opportunities, going to South By was like never really on my radar. I never grew up going to any film festivals. I knew about them, obviously, but like it wasn't on my list of things to do kind of thing. I really wanted to do Sundance this year and then I missed out on it. So I was like, let's do South By. This was before I found out that Monkey Man was headlining. And then I did find out and I was like, this is the justification I need to spend this much money on this trip. So, I didn't know how the festival worked. For example, there were influencers, you know, that I know in LA here that were invited to the film festival that got like immediate access to a lot of the headliner films. And I didn't even know that that was like a possibility. I don't know who they talked to. I was so new to all of it. So I went in super naive and was like, I'm just going to go and waltz into these lines and watch these movies, you know? Not thinking that there's a process, a part of all of this. So yeah, for Monkey Man, that was my first big screening that I went to. And there was a 3-hour line. And honestly, it was like one of my favorite memories from the entire trip, just because I was in line with huge action fans. Some of them, even though they weren't South Asian, had seen a lot of Indian cinema, and just talking to them and kind of like educating them on my background and sharing some of my favorite films that I think they should check out, or vice versa, that they had seen, because also Texas has a huge Desi population. It was just such a fun experience. And then obviously going to see the actual movie was so much fun. And I walked out just feeling like I need to make a video. Like I have to talk about this film, which is such a testament to what the movie represents. And the next day I just kind of put that video up and didn't really think anything else of it, because I had so many other films to watch. There was 12 other films at South By that had South Asian actors or directors. So I was like super stoked to just kind of be there and experience it all. And then midweek, Universal, who I've never really been in contact with, emailed me and they just offered me a chance to interview Dave. And I feel like I misread the email like 13 times. So I was just trying to double check. It's like, is there a typo here? Do they want me to take down my review for like some type of, you know, miscommunication? Like I immediately thought I was in trouble. And then, yeah, just the next week it all happened and that's kind of it.
That's awesome. I watched the interview, and first of all, so wait, just so I'm clear, was that the first like celebrity in a movie setting thing that you have interviewed, or no?
Yeah, I've done one celebrity interview before with Disney. I interviewed Jake Gyllenhaal, which was a dream. He's so beautiful. But it was very short. I was press on the carpet. So it was like very quick snippets.
Okay.
This was like my first like press interview. And I'm obviously not press. I'm just a creator. So it was like being around real journalists was like so crazy.
I gotta say, I was skimming your content from the most recent sort of a little bit back. I'm like, it felt so smooth and so like old hat to you. Like you seemed excited and rightfully so, but like it was with just, I'm sorry if I sound a little shocked, because I was like, this was just really solid, good interview. I was like, this is someone who's done this a bunch. So I was just a little taken aback that it's only Devin and Jake are the two at this point.
Admittedly, yeah, those are the two people I've been watching the most recently.
Oddly.
Check out Roadhouse on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
I was super nervous going into it, especially because like I didn't even know who to ask for advice, you know, like being a creator is so isolating and like, it's not like I can Google like, how does one do a press interview? You know, like it's just nerve wracking as hell. So, yeah.
But I think from that interview as well, you could see that he was excited to talk to you. He even commented on your perfume as you walked in, which I think was a great moment. But he was excited to talk to you as well and talk to someone, you know, because the film is so much about representation in culture. And he is an interesting figure, I think, cinematically. We've talked about him, particularly in our episode about The Green Knight, which had a really disarming moment for me personally in that film. But he is a person who's kind of, I guess this is a word that I don't really like, but gets used often for cross-cultural performers when they transcend one culture to the next. Is he does seem to have that sort of capability of being both accepted within Indian communities and also within Western cultures in a profound way, not least of which playing David Copperfield an English knight in The Green Knight, which is sort of quite an anomalous situation. But I did get the impression that he was very excited to talk to you as well. And you got, I hope that came through. It certainly felt that way when we were both watching it.
Yeah. I also didn't know if he had seen my review. And that was what I was like most, not worried about, but I really, like, you just don't know what their understanding of you is, right? So it's hard to then walk into the room and not want to introduce yourself and talk about your content. So I did take a second to like just tell him, this is what I do, just in case you don't know. But because I didn't want him to know, you know, think I was just a fangirl, because I obviously am. But like, there's so much more to much I appreciate him. Yeah, of course. Of course.
So, Matt, there has been a long and winding road for this film to reach our screens.
It's true.
Could you, before we start that conversation in describing that long and winding road, could you give us the IMDb description of said movie?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Here we go. The Internet Movie Database says that Monkey Man is, quote, an anonymous young man unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continue to systematically victimize the poor and powerless, unquote. That is accurate. If I'm reviewing the IMDb, description, you know, there's not a ton of flourish there, but it's very accurate. 7 out of 10. I think that's a real solid description.
Well, one of the key figures that we haven't mentioned in any of our discussions thus far, and it's only been a few minutes, is a name that has been prominently featured in the marketing, which is one Jordan Peele of Monkey Paw Productions, who obviously has a strong, solid relationship with Universal Pictures at this point as well. The backstory to this movie is that it was initially greenlit by Netflix for around $10 million. And at some point during that production, which obviously was, during the 2020-21 years plagued by COVID and difficulties in an actual production, you know, not least which a first-time director and an somewhat untested action movie star at this point to film a production like this in India. But just to put it in context as well, a similar film, another film that came out at the same time, also greenlit by Netflix, was Extraction, the Chris Hemsworth vehicle, which takes place in India as well. And
some different perspectives, though.
Certainly different perspectives, but you could understand that from Netflix point of view, there may have been some corollary between these two films as they went into production. Unfortunately, what happened is that Dev's film fell out of favor with Netflix, and the film was not abandoned halfway, but left unfinished for a time until one Jordan Peele watched it and decided to, I guess, put his thumb on the scale or affect this, you know, become a producer on this film as well and have Universal buy the film. And you can kind of tell there's been some re-editing in this film. It was started in 2020. It is now 2024, and this film is releasing theatrically, which I guess, in a way, is a major victory considering the fact that, you know, despite the fact that Extraction has had a sequel at this point, I don't think we have any desire to talk about that film, right?
I don't think anyone is talking about Extraction now other than us at this very moment.
Yeah. To put it in context, right? Have you thought about the movie Extraction in any way?
And I watched it on a plane.
Yep.
And I did it specifically because I love the rumor or the conspiracy theory that the change in oxygen level and pressure actually makes you feel emotions deeper, so bad movies will seem good. And so I was like, I'll watch Extraction. That was the film I watched.
Yeah, there's a great phenomenon that I think I've seen another creator talk about recently, which is they modeled it under Chris Pratt's films, which is like there are certain movies which you know for a fact exist, and you may have even seen it, but you have no recollection of what it was in any way, shape, or form. So again, for Monkey Man to receive a theatrical release, to be released in the way that it is right now, to be talked about in this way, I think is a major victory on this part. The movie comes with two kind of interesting objectives. One is the placement of Dev Patel away from sort of devilishly handsome English actor with some Shakespearean roots to action leading star a la Keanu Reeves in John Wick, which is a name that gets referenced for this film entirely. And also to make a Western blockbuster or a Western action film sit in India, because this is clearly not an Indian production. So I think it's important to kind of maybe start the conversation in just acknowledging those two objectives. And then perhaps a third, which is that, which is trying to identify and contextualize the film in its politics, because that is something that we're going to talk about a little bit in terms of how does the film situate itself in current Indian politics. And so with all of that said, just with those kinds of three objectives, you know, two and a half, if they're depending on how you look at it, I'm curious how the movie played for you just on a pure going to the movies on a Friday night, because again, this was a theatrical release, which you could buy popcorn for in your local AMC or Regal movie theaters. How did it play for you just in those terms?
I feel as though, I don't want to start off with a critique, but...
No, do it. Do it. That's the best.
As someone that consumes a ton of Indian action cinema, I'm a huge, specifically Indian action junkie. I feel like there are themes in this movie that I've seen come across in a lot of films that I've watched since I was growing up as a kid. So there wasn't anything like super shocking to me. What did really impress me is the fact that this guy had one shot and he was like, I'm going to take it. I'm going to put every single ounce and thought that I have in my brain, every socio-political piece of commentary that I can, and just stuff it in here. Sometimes it works for that reason, and sometimes I feel like things get sacrificed. But overall, you can't say that anyone is doing it like Dev Patel is doing it or is eventually going to do it. I feel like there are concepts in here that are so high level that I can also say that Indian cinema doesn't even accomplish half the time. So upon first watch, I was just so shocked by what he got in this film.
Yeah, I was sort of jumping on there as well. I agree entirely. It's funny. I, first and foremost, loved watching this movie. I think you'll hear some of my like minor critiques as well, but something I want to couch across the board, even when I am picking nits, is that the... like just basically what you just said, Shiv, the amount of like stuff that is taken and brought in this tote bag of a movie that like normally in a lot of I'll speak to as the American action film sort of junkie, especially from the 80s, 90s and today, that like you get a lot of cool action sequences and things, but very like I'm struggling to think right now of an American action film that loads so much cultural context alongside it. I'm sure there might be one or two, but I can't think of it right now. Like this it's carrying so much weight. And while I don't know if it's entirely like even or like the weight is distributed like exactly perfectly, it also in my eyes doesn't matter, because even the fact that it takes the swings and it's balancing all those plates spinning while also just kicking so much ass and being very clear about the multitude of things it's trying to say, I don't mind if like a bit of the nuance is off. Like I just am here for like combined like actual culturally relevant critique and a quintessential kitchen fight in the back of a nightclub. Like, I'm here for that. So I absolutely loved watching this movie. What about you, Shear?
Yeah, so I think on the terms that I kind of laid out, which is the objective of making an action film set in India with a Western, ultimately an Indian lead that hasn't been tested in this genre before, I think this film is a rousing success on those terms. I think it really delivers. I think I'm sort of couching this a little bit in the sense that I was more impressed with the film in terms of what it achieves and what it sets out to achieve, which I think it does very, very well. I think the fight choreography is brutal in places. And like Shiv, like I think you said as well, there's no sense of anything left on the floor in terms of like pulling back any punches. It really feels like there's also a lot of value placed on the location in these fight sequences, which I think is really a testament to maybe some of the limitations they might have had in budget, but also, you know, like really embracing, okay, we are here in India. We're in this small bathroom. How do we embrace the kind of details that we need here? Okay, what are the weapons we're going to use in this situation? You know, we're going to be using a bathroom sink, you know, like, and then we're also going to have a gun fall into a toilet and him have to dig it out in the midst of a fight, which is just going to gross me out, but really effective. And also, there's no sense of like things being left on the table in terms of both the gratuity of the violence, which I think is quite, it can be quite shocking, but at the same time, quite earned within this film. It doesn't feel gratuitous for the sake of gratuity. And one of the criticisms I've had of the John Wick series, for example, is a sense of repetitiveness to the sequences there. Every scene here feels quite fresh and new and interesting, and there are new ideas being introduced throughout that I think work really, really well. Now, on a sort of structural level, breaking the structure down to both like a sort of syntactic and semantic, you know, like how is executed versus what it's trying to say. I think it's executed beautifully. The editing in the film is really striking. The movie kind of plays in close-up a lot of times, which is unusual for fight sequences like this, but it actually really, really works because Dev Patel himself has an unusual fighting style. As you can tell, it's a learned fighting style as opposed to someone who's grown up, you know, as a performing martial artist his entire life. It feels rough and tumble. It feels messy. It feels like he's missing punches all the time. But that's enhanced by the fact that the camera is in close with him and is really bouncing around in an unelegant way, but elegant for what the film is trying to achieve. And I think it really, really works on that level. In terms of the structure of where the film is going and what it is trying to ultimately get to, I did find that there was a sort of muddying of the waters in terms of how the film is told, for one, in terms of revealing what the flashback is in slow pieces throughout the movie. And then ultimately, what the turn is towards the back end of the movie, which sort of, you know, resembles the structure of Bruce Lee's Game of Death, which is that there is this sort of tower of villains that he has to fight towards in order to get to the top boss who's on the top floor. That is sort of a classic classic action genre kind of trope. But there's a sort of underlying political sense to what's going on that wasn't too far afoot from, say, Todd Phillips' film The Joker, where it was this sort of sense of a character who ascends a sort of ranking among the people and who becomes a hero of the people. And in the case of The Joker, we kind of was sort of talked about that film as like maybe having a misunderstanding of how like political movements like that work, or not quite sort of functioning on the same level. I did feel a little bit of the same way about how this film kind of gets to that point when Monkey Man Hanuman becomes a hero of the people. I was sort of kind of wondering how we got to that point through the way that the film is kind of structured and set up. So it was a little muddy for me, but not a film that I wasn't impressed with. I was very, very deeply impressed by what the film was trying to achieve on its basis terms, and for the most part, thinking was quite successful in doing so. I don't know if those sort of qualms kind of started feeling making their way to the surface for either of you.
I was not ready for the Joker reference. I mean,
the way this man becomes a man of the people by the end of it, of people that, you know, we haven't seen too much of, was a little bit of a reach.
Well, I mean, maybe from a structural, maybe editing perspective, but I will say in this film, he goes and wins a bunch of fights and gets money for these people that trained him and saved him and did these things. So there is a, you know, reciprocal respect and thing between what is going on. And in Joker, he just shoots a night like time talk show host. Like, so but I don't know.
In this case, he has one fight and suddenly is.
But he wins the money to then save the temple that saved him.
That saved him, and now he is a man of the people, right?
Well, he's a man of that temple. He's a man.
Here's my question, I guess. Is his quest for vengeance now a populist quest for vengeance in the film?
No. Like, are you saying that Dev Patel lives in a society?
Yeah, I think I am, yeah.
What? I don't want to harp on it too much. I just didn't like Joker that much, and I really liked this movie, so I was like, whoa!
That shouldn't affect whether what I'm saying is affecting you. You can like this movie and just...
Don't agree with the premise.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Shiv, you mentioned a little bit of some qualms about how the film kind of plays out. I'm curious if... Perhaps there's none, but like I'm curious if anything I said kind of resonates.
Yeah, what's really funny, not to bring Joker back into this, but I immediately, when I walked out, thought of Batman. And I thought that's probably what most people are going to relate this story to, but that I didn't want to mention it because I thought that DC fans would just come for my neck. So I did it. But if you think about like the villains, without getting into like too much of spoiler territory, and the fact that there are police involved in this, and he is kind of this hero for the people, I will understand the background that you're coming from of this relating to Joker. I don't think he ever like puts the people on his back. I feel like he puts specifically this Hijra community, the trans community that we see in the film, on his back because of that reciprocal thing that Matt was talking about. And I think that he just has that innate sense to want to help the poor population of India. This, you know, what India calls the untouchables. And Dave has said in many interviews that he wanted to flip the script because he thinks that the richest people are actually the ones that are untouchable. But in India, it's the poor people that, you know, you feel like you have to ignore and that, you know, are living this very low life. But systems of oppression have caused them to not really succeed in life, right? So my qualms with the film actually are more so with the punches that I do feel like he holds back. And I think that entirely has to do with Netflix dropping the project in the first place, which is that they were too afraid to let some of the political commentary in this out. I really would love to see like the original script in this because I do feel like some of it got cut, which is funny because you said that you feel like there wasn't stuff on the editing floor. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm positive there was stuff just because I've heard so much about them re-editing, you know, parts of the film because it represents a specific political party in India and they turned the color orange into red just to make sure that they wouldn't get people mad. And what we're seeing now is that it's not even going to get released in India because of censorship laws and a very conservative ruling party. So I feel like I'm not going to put that past him though. Like that is a qualm that I have, but I understand why he needed to do what he needed to do, you know, globally for the film to be accepted. At the end of the day, though, I think that it takes the risk that a lot of other Indian media doesn't even do. So I appreciate it for that aspect. And I can overlook it, like both of you mentioned, for those like tiny little nitpicky things that I had. And also you mentioned editing. I do have a problem with some of the editing. But maybe that's just from like a cleanliness aspect, like specifically there's that scene in the beginning where they're like chasing the wallet and it's a really great scene. And then all of a sudden it's like quick cut into a wide shot of the city. And I'm like, okay, what, how did we get here? Like, it was just so jarring to me. That's so specific. I know. There are obviously some really beautifully shot scenes that I loved, like him escaping on the rooftops and jumping to the river. That was incredible. So there's stuff to appreciate amongst the things that I
also, I think in that particular scene, the first appearance of a CGI Dev Patel in that sequence, running across those rooftops. I agree. I think the film is very specifically leaning into its limitations visually, in terms of like being very close up in certain sequences and just cutting really rapidly. But I think it works for me. It was a style that I kind of found a little jarring to begin with, because the first fight, the first Monkey Man fight, you were like, oh, what, you know, like, how do the parameters, like, what is the fighting style here? What is the, how is the choreography going to work in a way that I can kind of really visually understand it? And it's very, very tight and contained. But the more that the film went on, I sort of grew to understand that that was the aesthetic of the film. And the more that I kind of felt that it worked as well, I think the actual execution of the flashbacks was quite powerful. And there's a hallucinatory scene in the middle of this film and a tabla training montage, which I think is really beautifully executed and a really good example of where the editing really plays into both the kind of rhythmic quality of what's going on screen in terms of the actual music that's being played and the, you know, the kind of visual language that the film has, which again is very tight, it's very contained, but we still get a, like, again, the thing that I really just liked about the film overall was just enjoying the fact that these felt like very real locations that weren't propped up for the film. They felt like locations that they had actually found, and they were really embracing, this is where we're going to film and how do we take into account what we're seeing here?
Yeah.
And how do we exploit it for its greatest value? Yeah.
Speak to the location thing for a second. Also, they didn't get the rights to film in India naturally because of the story. They actually filmed in Indonesia.
Right.
And a lot of what you're seeing is just like reused sets,
right.
But also you're seeing a lot of reused people because they had limited staff considering it was shot during the pandemic. So you like see the same bad guys like in a sequence, and then they like literally go change their outfits and like hair and makeup, and then they come back out again. So it's so funny once you see it. I've seen it 3 times now, and I just like look for those little things, you know.
It's funny because we're talking about the editing, and we get into sort of when you get into action cinema. And again, I'm a novice when it comes to Indian action cinema specifically. I haven't seen a ton of it. And actually, Shiv, I'd be curious if sort of from a stylistic question, sort of after I go along this movie, obviously, we're talking about the editing was quick. It was very fast cuts. And obviously, the cinematography was very tight. That was to, I think, you know, assist in some of the brutality and perhaps the fact that Dev is not a traditionally trained his entire life martial artist. And like, normally I'm not a huge fan of close-up quick cut, but I thought that this did it so exquisitely well overall. Like I'm always in it for the visceral feeling of whatever the action sequence is. And every one of these made me feel like I was there, or I was like as close to feeling something that I was watching in a either horribly physical way or adventurous or something. Like it felt very poignant and effective when I'm watching it. The thing is, like, with, like, for instance, what I'm just thinking of them now because they name drop it in the movie, that John Wick films do, and I think they do progressively well. Point of John Wick films, progressively worse. Implementation of action sequences, even though they do start to feel old, like from an impressive, like, oh wow perspective, they get better. And there's like wide shots of like lifelong stuntmen doing things and that sort of stuff. Yeah, that's all cool, and I like that too. But I go back to, especially as I've, you know, as one of the world's oldest millennials, I feel like as I'm getting older, I like would rather have the substance behind, like, I want to know what the reason is for the cool action scene as opposed to just like, oh good, now they're falling downstairs for 20 minutes. Like I and this film, like, I'm happier to get the meaning and the weight behind what's happening and maybe not see my exact favorite style of action editing, knowing exactly like the story that this movie went through to get made, how it definitely did get recut and probably saved and had to make a bunch of concessions for X, Y, and Z. So I don't know. I found for what this movie was trying to do, even though it's not my favorite style of action editing and action sort of sequences, it was so hyper effective. In Indian action cinema, do they lean on, like, I mean, is it all over the place? Do they lean on closes? Do they try to do big sort of spectacle, like longer wide shots? Is there a vibe or a sort of style that is more prevalent than another?
Yeah, it's a lot of explosions.
Sure.
Cool, you're getting a lot of wide shots.
Yeah.
Cool guys walk away from explosions a lot in Indian action movies.
A lot. They're walking away from the action most of the time, which is great. Yeah. They're like, that's not for me.
Is like one of the greatest explosion walk-awayers that has ever lived.
Yeah.
Right. But they have incorporated a lot more hand-to-hand combat just because of how popular American action cinema has become. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from East Asian yes. influence because they're so close. They literally could just get guys from Indonesia just like Dave did and like train in India. So that's why I have been trying my hardest to get people to watch Indian action cinema, because I just feel like people are really missing out on the fact that it's really evolved past what people stereotypically associate it to. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, I think, in sequences of Indian cinema that I've watched, and again, I will very heavily preface this with someone who isn't that well versed in current Indian cinema. I, again, grew up with it, but have not been following it very much. Also, a larger reliance on CGI sequences as well, because CGI is a lot cheaper in India. It's it gets used quite a lot as well. So a lot more explosions, a lot more vehicles. You see a little bit of that in this film, but I don't think in the same way that you would see in what was the Shah Rukh Khan film that I'm thinking of, where he was on a train and the train explodes halfway through and there's like a battle between the train. It's a recent film. I'm going blank.
Javan.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and over a sort of, and then, you know, we talked about RRR on this podcast as well, and this is the idea of maximalist cinema as well, where there's a sense that the heroes are much, much larger than life. First of all, these guys, the sort of male leads of Bollywood films now, are extraordinarily ripped in a sort of like, in an almost kind of a way that harkens back to Schwarzenegger in the early 80s, you know, like it's that kind of ripped where it's oily and it's just, you know, muscular in a kind of weird way. But yeah, a kind of maximalist idea. I think one thing I really want to get into, because another film that came to mind when I was watching this was Wonder Woman 1984. And we had a really interesting conversation about Wonder Woman 1984 on this podcast, where we discussed the kind of political context that the film flirts with and how we can sort of situate it within that context. Now, one of the key ideas in this film is that the kid and his family have been displaced by a government body who have taken back the land to build a religious temple. I think in this film it's called the Bhakti Sharti, I think his name is, or I forget the sort of the super boss.
Baba Shakti.
Baba Shakti, that's right.
Yeah.
And I'm there is a sort of interesting similar story that is going on in India recently with the Modi government that has been in power since 2014, which is the building of a mindi on atop of of what was formerly a Muslim masjid. And the idea of the Hindu nationalism that has taken place, which is which has caused this kind of tension between Hindus and Muslims, and an overall kind of lean towards a right-wing politic, that I think the film is flirting with a rejection of. Now, I want to pull up an article that Siddhanta Dlanka, a friend of the show, had written about this in both Time Magazine, and you mentioned, Shiv, an article that he had written for IGN as well. But he talks about the use of Hindu imagery, particularly in this case, the sort of reclamation or the sort of reinterpretation of the Hanuman story or the use of the Hanuman story. In one scene, there is a sort of common usage of the Hanuman mythology where the kid's character, undergoing some sort of hallucinogen, opens up his heart to kind of receive enlightenment and understand the greater purpose of his actions or his place in the world, which is common to the Hanuman story. And Siddhant writes, the reclamation of such images appears to be Patel's goals, one he shares with numerous Hindu leaders who have continued to battle Hindu nationalism. But the use of Hindu imagery as a call to violence reminiscent of the Hindutva project is central to the kid's mission, resulting in a narrative dissonance. In comparison, the movie's villains only use Hinduism as a facade for violence and financial gain, rather than a sincere fixture of their fanaticism. They represent Hindutva only in the abstract, echoing its power structures without its ideology. Kid, meanwhile, perhaps inadvertently embodies it in both belief and action. Now, I actually found that quite an interesting take on the film, because I can see that the idea that a film is really flirting with pushing up against, as you mentioned, you know, a film difficult to film in India, pushing up against Hindu nationalism, but also at the same time using, deep cultural, deeply important cultural, Hindu cultural imagery to do so, can strike kind of an unusual chord in this movie. And I think for me, my understanding of Hinduism is that that is kind of a feature, not a bug. But I'm sort of curious, you know, as someone who consumes Hindu cinema a lot, whether that was disarming in any way, or whether that sort of that usage did feel like maybe reaching or unusual, or how you felt about it in general, Shiv.
Yeah, I think that in order to understand why he chose Hanuman, you first need to reference the point that this is an adaptation and not meant to be some like literal usage of this god Hanuman. That so many in India worship. That's what makes it so problematic. And I can completely see where Siddhant is coming from, because using, you know, Hinduism as the reason for the violence, especially when Hanuman was not about that, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I recently made a video about, you know, all the references and influences that I saw in Monkey Man to this story of Ramayana. And Ramayana is like a big epic that's been, you know, reproduced so many times in Indian cinema, time and time again, most recently just last year. And, you know, Hanuman is a very titular character in that story. And I feel like maybe I relate to Dave in the sense that, like, if I were to make a story, I would want to reference something that I know a lot of people are going to understand, but at the same time, make it my own and put my own spin on it. And there are elements of Hanuman's character that he definitely embodies, mainly the two being strength and courage. Mm-hmm. But where people that are criticizing this inclusion, where they're coming from is usually the fact that there is no rage, there is no violence that's associated with that god and his practices. So like, I can see the, you know, juxtaposition that he's trying to bring up. In my mind, though, I'm not Hindu. I grew up raised with my parents, you know, trying to indoctrinate me into Hinduism. And I feel like I just never really related to it. I think growing up here, you're just exposed to so much. And, you know, not to get too deep into this, but yeah. So like, I feel like when I was watching the film, I understood exactly where he was coming from of like, it's a referential point. And you also have to maybe take into consideration that Western audiences have absolutely no idea about any of this, right? They're coming into it so fresh that all of it is new concept. And they're only going to probably take away the socio-political commentary, which is the Hindu-Muslim conflict. And a lot of the trans issues that are kind of brought up in the film, and maybe the religious components of it are going to be lost on them, which is essentially why I made the video, because I wanted them to realize that there is some influence here, maybe not direct, but it is definitely referential.
I think there's something to be said, and I want to make it very clear. I am not remotely knowledgeable about Hindu mythology or religion or anything along those lines. But there's something that I think Dev does here, to your point, Shiv, like it is an adaptation of the Hanuman story or mythos, right? And other cinema across the world, across other religions, do this all the time. John Wick is still on my brain because obviously the correlations or whatever, but like, and while there's no like true, they don't deep dive into Catholic like doctrine, there's Catholicism and imagery of crosses and things all over that film. Like they're like religion, myth, etc. has been adapted time and time again to do all different styles of cinema from, you know, all different types, including action. And while I am not familiar with the pure telling of the Hanuman story, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an analogy of something I know of, like, ah, yes, this is a thing from another culture that I am familiar with, that they took A, B, and C, but they left, you know, D and E off the table because they're trying to tell a different story. I feel like that's kind of done a lot across cultures in cinema. And I think, honestly, it probably has to do with the type of movie and the you know, the two sides of it. One, kick-ass action movie, here's a really good way to do it, yada, yada, yada. The other is, well, other action movies who want to deal with the subject matter or what's the word I'm looking for? Unfairness to a group of people or oppression or just any sort of, you know, minority group that a majority is keeping down or hurting in some way. There is the sort of like action movie fantasy of using violence to then come up and, you know, attack the oppressors. And here they just do that and they tack on what would be essentially a myth from a character's childhood that he feels very attached to because his mother told him before she was brutally taken from him. He finds strength in that myth and adapts it to his own purposes to then move forward and try to find justice and or vengeance in the way that this character, again, in an action movie that is very much playing on these sort of revenge tropes would. I feel like I might have talked in like nine circles there, but I think like there's something, I guess it goes back to, even though my opinion in this, because I am not connected to the religion at all, probably means little to nothing. I think across all religions or any sort of like theology or cultural stories, I like when things are adapted and changed to then be put into other things. Granted, I don't have, you know, emotional weight in the race, so that might not be fair. But yeah, I don't know. I liked that it pulled from some things and not entirely others, if that makes sense.
I think I agree with, I actually like that the way it's using the Hanuman tale. I think it's fun and it's like an interesting pull to kind of use it as a juxtaposed against, you know, like the sort of mythical tale, which I think what we've seen in Indian culture as well is that, you know, the Hanuman story or even many of the Indian deity stories are akin to superheroes, akin to, you know, like cartoon comic book characters.
Because a lot of them took their influence from some of these places, like the commonplace things. I think in the interview, like, Dev mentions that, correct? In your interview, was that like the Superman thing? Was that there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like pulling the shirt open is the same as pulling the heart. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's actually fun. I think the sort of more interesting thing is like how the film kind of skirts up against the sort of real world politic that is going on in India right now, particularly with the case of the mandir that is being built on top of the masjid and that displacement that has occurred with it. I actually think that for the most part that works. I'm interested in the way that you know, Siddhant, for example, and this is all apologies to Siddhant. He's a friend of the show. We've had him on here before.
We're arguing against Siddhant's point that he's not here.
He's not here to kind of,
sorry, buddy.
But you know, he also finishes his article with like monkey, in a time when Indian industries like Bollywood increasingly toe the party line, Monkey Man is buoyed enough by enough political gusto to still ruffle a few feathers. And I think there's an interesting dynamic at play here, which is that possibly why all three of us kind of responded to the film a little bit more, I'll speak for myself here, than I would for a John Wick, is that it does seem to have more on its mind about the sort of nature of both heroism and community, and in the sort of the sort of embodiment of heroism that I think Hanuman actually represents on a broader scale. So the Hajira community, which gets represented here really beautifully, there's an incredible sequence here where they, it's one of the most gorgeous kind of ideas that you could have in an action film, which is that an entire trans community can turn up and be the heroes of their own story for a sequence. And it is really quite lovely to watch. It's quite astounding to watch. And I, again, for me, the tabla Rocky training montage was one where the movie really synthesized in a perfect way. It synthesized its sort of ideas about its use of culture and history and both its like influence of wanting to be an action-based cinema, you know, borrowing all the tenets of the genre, the Rocky montage, and kind of getting to an interesting place. So that is one where I kind of actually felt that this really, really started to work. And for the most part, I also really want to stress this as well, despite like bringing up these issues as interesting in terms of like trying to situate the film politically and contextually, I'm on the side of this movie in terms of, I do think that the film really sets out to do something quite ambitious, and it's not a home run for me, but I am on the side of like, I admire the ambition and I admire the swing. And I think for the most part, it actually does connect for me and really, you know, works. There is, you know, inevitably in these cases, I think Shiv, you kind of pointed this out as well. There's a male fantasy element to all of this. There's a, like a heavily indebted male, you know, a Batman-esque male fantasy to this, which I, you know, I just watched Roadhouse over the weekend. I watched the Equalizer movies a few months ago. And I was like, yeah, this is just this enduring quality to the male revenge fantasy that we always kind of borrow from and keeps coming back again. And this is a film that's clearly in that world as well. So no denying that mileage may vary on how successful this is. But I found that this was, it had a little bit more on its mind than most of what I've been seeing. And I admired the swing. I don't know if that's kind of where the equation balances out for either of you as well.
Yeah, I think when we're going back to the word muddled, at the end of the day, did audience members walk out with the same understanding of who the good guy is and who the bad guy is? Because that to me means that it wasn't muddled. Right. If they're very clear in understanding his politics in the film, which is Islamophobia is rampant back in 2019 when he wrote it, and still now that trans people are still fighting for their rights in India and around the world, and using this film to empower them is a way to maybe change people's perspectives on that, then I feel like mission accomplished. Like,
yeah.
What's muddled? Because at the end of the day, he doesn't bring up Hinduism at all in the film. He brings up gods for sure, but the word Hinduism is like never brought up. And that's why I feel like it is meant to be this like adaptive reality of like, yes, I did grow up understanding that there are multiple gods and each of them represent a certain thing. And that then would inspire me to enact maybe a good deed to someone based off of what that god did, or have courage because this is what that god represents. And at the end of the day, that's what I think the messaging is for Hanuman in the film. And I just feel like if it comes across very clear cut, and I'm talking to someone that's like literally never heard of any of this, and they still walk out and they have just like a very clear understanding of it, then shrug.
Yeah, right. Then it works. I wonder the going back to the sort of the creation of this movie and how long it took, and the Netflix of it all. It's funny we brought up Extraction. Mm-hmm. And because that does also, you know, canonically take place in India, I believe, or part of it. And there was no problem releasing that movie from my understanding, either on Netflix or in India, I believe. Whereas the politics around this movie, obviously, I don't know. Again, I have not done enough research on this specific topic, and maybe one of you can sort of fill me in. But it does feel like Netflix didn't draw. Like, let's back up for a second. Netflix isn't concerned. I'll back up even further. Netflix cares more about quantity than quality. I would say that is a safe assumption about Netflix at this point. It might be a globalization, but that is what that is my humble opinion. So this movie is good. And therefore, if it wasn't based in some sort of politicking around how Netflix wants to do business in India, etc., I'm not really seeing a reason why this movie dies on the vine for Netflix. This is the same, you know, network air quotes that airs Extraction 2. Like, I don't like there's and actually those are probably some of the better ones. What's the Gray Man? Was that the milquetoast action movie that cost $130 million or something? Like, they're spending money. They're making movies. They're putting up everything from prestige Oscar-winning cinema to some real garbo stuff. So, I don't know. In my opinion, the only reason this would get dropped so harshly would be the political message. I don't know if I'm the only one sort of getting that vibe or not. And again, this is conjecture. This is me guesstimating. But that's what it sort of feels like. And I don't know. Did either of you sort of feel that in your reads of it?
I don't know if that's the case because Netflix has put up politically controversial material before, and as you say, they're not—they're kind of an apolitical machine. So I don't know if Netflix fears an Indian backlash or not. I'm not entirely sure. But the one thing is that of note, you know, Shiv, you mentioned this as well, is that the film has not got a release date for India as of yet. I think the film, without mentioning him by name, is critical of Modi himself. Has a sort of Modi type figure within this film who's seen as politically ineffectual, rather more of a sycophant, to use religious fanaticism. And then the film is also very pointedly highlighting the hypocrisy of the religious fanaticism, against a sort of brothel environment where those who espouse religious fanaticism, still go into a brothel and pay for women and lead a hedonistic lifestyle in opposition to what they espouse religiously. But I also don't think that that's actually uncommon for Indian cinema either. I don't think that that is like a position that is controversial in many of the Indian films I've seen as well. You know, there is this sort of underlying sense of heroism and the common man versus the religious right or the religious that oppress them. So I don't know if it's that so much. My guess, to really just put it on the table, is I think the movie was probably underfunded by Netflix as a risk gamble, with Dev Patel as leading man. I think it had a budget of $10 million. So not a huge budget to begin with. And I think it was buoyed up by the purchase by Universal Pictures. And I think the great triumph here is maybe one less about politics and more about the value of the big screen in a situation like this, because as I mentioned before, I doubt very much Extraction is a film that we will talk about. I had forgotten the film The Gray Man had existed up until you mentioned it just a few seconds ago. So I think the sort of maybe underlying thing here is the power of a cinematic release to sort of prop up a film like this versus a straight to Netflix streaming. So I don't particularly think that there is an issue there with Netflix rejecting the film because of its political content. But as we know, as we did note, it has not got an India release date. To be fair, Oppenheimer didn't release in Japan up until like about a month ago. There is the geopolitics of opening a film that concerns a nation when it is not made by that nation is prevalent across a lot of movies as well.
Right. But Oppenheimer's, parent company that would put it out didn't drop it because they weren't worried it was going to be released in Japan. I'm not saying Netflix did that either. I'm just saying that's a little different. Like, obviously different countries are going to have, or different places are going to have
Universal
different
Universal Pictures, by the way.
Yeah.
And there was a long build up to where the Oppenheimer would be released.
Sure.
In Japan,
and rightfully so.
Up until recently.
Yeah.
So I don't know about all of that. I think the triumph here is Dev Patel leading man, Dev Patel action star, Dev Patel director. And that's kind of a Dev Patel trifecta, but I think all of that really lands for me.
I feel like, when Shang-Chi came out, we saw a very similar, or like right before it came out, we saw this whole like argument about, diverse storytelling not selling and studios taking risks on it, yada, yada, bullshit. But that's kind of what I got the feeling of. Once again, it wouldn't make sense because Netflix has taken the risk on a lot of foreign content.
Yeah.
But it just feels like, again, because Dave was trying to do too much, they were like, I don't really know where you're going with this. And it's very clear that Jordan Peele saw a lot of reason to pick it back up and put it out there. So,
yeah. And I'm glad that he did, because now, let's sort of pivot slightly to Dev director. Like, that is cool as hell. And like, it is, I can't even imagine the difficulty it is to make a movie like this, as this is a first feature, right? Am I mistaken in that? Yeah. Like, again, we've all sort of said like, oh, it stumbles here and there, but it gets like across exactly what it's trying to do. And you leave that cinema feeling awesome. And like, you just experienced something sort of epic. And how cool is it that this guy who we've kind of just seen transform across a couple different ways of Shihira, as I believe you sort of put, like, different sort of wheelhouses. Now it's like, oh yeah, and he can kick ass at this. Like, is just, I'm really excited to see, like, what his next, do we know what his next directorial outing is going to be, or is he just sort of still in the
actually, that's a great question. I'm actually not sure.
The glow of this one.
I feel like he's gonna act, though, because he's mentioned several times that he's, like, missed out on a bunch of roles.
Oh no!
Of this film. Yeah. So I feel like he's kind of maybe missing that aspect, but I said the same thing. Like, I really wanted to see what was going to come next from him. I also think, you know, a lot of reviewers have picked up on the fact that for a directorial debut, you just feel the passion. Yeah. Like, there's so many people that put out a movie their first time and they're just, like, so timid and afraid of certain things, but you can feel, like, every, once again, he put every ounce of, you know, his thought, his intellect, his heart into this. And you can see it in every frame, a lot of the character development too, just his passion for his culture too, just kind of exuding through him in a way that so many of us watching will probably feel so proud of it now versus trying to, like, run away and hide from it. And I think that's, like, such a major element to diverse storytelling that gets forgotten, is, like, once you see the final product on a big screen and you see how people are reacting to it and obviously absorbing it, it makes you feel so proud of who you are and your identity. And I think that he really can, like, relish in that now versus, like, being a little bit afraid of it.
It's also, I mean, like, as a film presence, he has got such wonderfully big, soulful eyes that, like, the camera just loves, you know, like, and it's the kind of thing where those sequences early on when he's kind of plotting his first attempt at revenge, where there's a kind of fearfulness, a thoughtfulness behind the eyes that plays really well on screen that I think, you know, we wouldn't necessarily see in other, you know, like in leading men who have kind of been training their whole lives to be leading men in movies like this. There's a kind of, like, vulnerability that I think works really well here. And, you know, what's great about Dev Patel, there are other few actors like this as well, but, like, he can jump from a Wes Anderson kind of monologue driving storytelling to something like this, and it's an entirely seamless transition. He is great in The Green Knight as that sort of, like, vulnerable leading figure who hasn't really understood the consequences of what's about to happen to him. You know, he can do a David Copperfield as well as, you know, this, the origin point of Slumdog Millionaire as well. You know, it seems like there's a bigger range here that we can kind of be excited about. And I you know, for me, I said this in our episode on The Green Knight, there was a really startling moment when I can't remember the King character in The Green Knight touches his face and says, "I've missed you, cousin." And for me, that was a really kind of profound moment of representation. It was like, I've never seen someone in an English mythological story who looks like me, whose face is being touched by the king in a loving way. Like, I've never seen it. And I was like, I was kind of, like, dumb, you know, it's that moment where I was just, like, dumbfounded by it. Like, whoa, what is happening here? And, you know, I think the sort of exclamation point, the excitement of what he's done with this film here is to say, I can do a lot of things, and one of those is be in the kinds of movies like this. The unfortunate side is I don't want him to be in other people's action movies is the kind of the thing is, you know, I want him to be in his action movies. Right. I don't want him to be in The Gray Man or in Extraction or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Expendables 7.
Yeah, I don't want to see Dev Patel in Expendables 7. I just don't, you know?
I just put something weird together. We've been talking about John Wick a little bit in this, and there's something I just might have stumbled upon. The John Wick of it, the act one of this movie, the John Wick approach to his revenge fails. He gets a gun. He has a dog help him. He busts into the place. He climbs the tower, gets his ass kicked, and then it's sort of back to square one with an escape, and then his actual sort of, like, strength and or action man power comes from the Hanuman mythology, comes from the community that saved him, that he then tries to help as well, and comes, like, it feels like he learns more, like, there's some element he sort of, his character gains beyond just revenge that I think lets him win in the end, which is a strange thing. I don't know. Did that read for anybody else? I just sort of stumbled onto that right now. Like, John Wick approach didn't work. It can't just be revenge. You have to be doing it for a point. And then he finds a point, and then he does it. Like, John Wick, the only point is revenge at that. You know, does that make any sense? Am I talking crazy?
No, I think it makes sense. Yeah, I think it makes 100% sense. Yeah. I think it's where this movie elevates beyond a traditional action. I mean, I was thinking about other films in this elk. They weren't directorial debuts, but they were film like first presence films, which I sort of say to sometimes the second or third film that's actually, but it's the first one that we kind of see is Gareth Evans' film, The Raid, another Indonesian film. But like one that's really successful at, you know, infusing a sort of Game of Death style structure like this film has with a sort of human story about a man trying to, like, you know, retrieve his brother from a place and get himself out for his family. I think that really works. The other one was Jeremy Saulnier's film Blue Ruin, which I think, again, you know, has a sort of common revenge path, but really successfully. What makes Blue Ruin, The Raid, and this work really well is that they are films that feel like they've got a little bit more on their mind than the just the pure spectacle of what's going on. They're like, I've talked about this on this podcast before. There is a sort of tolerance of violence that I have in certain cases. This is a brutally violent film, probably more so than the John Wick, but because it has both variation, it feels like the violence has consequence to it. It actually, I appreciate that more than the sort of like sheer body count of some of these other movies. You know, like I actually like that the film feels like it has sort of consequence on its mind towards violence. It does eventually get in, you know, again, part of the male fantasy of it all. There's like a Kill Bill style room at the end where just henchmen roll in from every door. And, you know, like, you know, he kind of is able to dismiss them all pretty, not easily, but handily. But, you know, it's within the tenets of the genre itself. And I think it kind of works for that. So I did quite like this film.
I have seen all of the John Wicks, and what's interesting is that like, I get making the comparison for this film. It's just that there was this underlying thread. So like I mentioned, the story is inspired, not specifically only by Hanuman, but the story of the Ramayana, which to really dilute it for people is essentially the Super Mario Brothers story, where Bowser is a bad guy, there is a bad guy equivalent, and there is a hero, and then there's a monkey, half a monkey, half human god. Read up on it. Honestly, it's really worth it, especially after watching the film.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. But for me, yeah, of course, I saw these like little like nods and references. Like they even have the gun that's like, they say it's from John Wick.
Yeah.
And I feel like even Dave has come out and like really refuted that Universal is using that as a marketing tactic, because yeah, it gets butts in seats, I guess. But at the end of the day, like, I really hope that people spend the time after the fact to be like, I wonder why, you know, he fights, why these villains exist in this way, or why the structure of the story happens like this, or why he opens his chest and does that, because there is an answer for every single one of it. And I mean, maybe that's just like me trying to educate people on my culture and like some of the stories that I grew up listening to, but it just adds so much needed context to the story that won't, at the end of it, you won't want to really compare it to John Wick, because I just feel like it's so much more than that. And there's so much thought put into it that to reduce it down to that, especially because like that's how a lot of people are using it. Like they're starting out their reviews saying this Indian John Wick. And I'm like, just knock it off, dude. Like, I just can't. Just because he's wearing a suit. Like, are we serious? So
there's some red behind him sometimes. It's like, yeah, no, I totally get that.
Yeah. I think this conversation is hopefully explored some of the situational context to kind of help with that assessment. And again, I think it is we didn't even touch on the fact that the needle drops in this film are quite there's one really audacious needle drop towards the end of this movie, which gets into like a I don't know if it was death metal or heavy metal, but it was just like, it kind of felt not the actual genre, but like there was a punk rock attitude about it, about like adding that particular needle drop towards the end of the film that I really responded to and really liked. There was, I think, Shiv, you kind of mentioned there was like possibly an opportunity to showcase some South Asian musical artists here. And there's sort of some unusual kind of hip hop tracks at the beginning. I think there's a Kendrick Lamar track at the beginning and maybe a Jay-Z track somewhere in there as well. And there is a little bit of a sense of like, maybe that is a universal decree in order to like open up the internationalness of it all. But there, like that last needle drop when the Hajira fight sequence begins, I was kind of like, fuck yeah, punk rock, you know, yeah. Like love it. I was just like, yeah, fuck yeah, I loved it. There's no context for this choice and there's no reason why this particular piece of music should be used, but fuck yeah, I love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do want to talk about a song that is, it's a Bollywood song that's used during the brothel sequence. It's from a movie called Dirty Picture, which I think is just such a great like thematic tie-in to the context of that shot.
I don't know much about Sobita, I think is her name.
Sobita, yeah.
And she's quite well regarded. I know, like, my wife knew who she was, and you know, like, there was, she's
your wife
quite
has good
star.
Taste if she knows who she is.
She married me. What are you gonna say?
Wow.
but yeah, you know, like, she is quite a notable figure, and there is maybe when we come to the sort of the Netflix to Universal transition of this film, there's a sort of sense like maybe on the one hand. That was probably intended to be like the classic, I hate to put it in these terms, but hooker with a heart of gold kind of story that we've seen in films like this. It sort of gets abandoned halfway through. And part of me is kind of happy that it gets abandoned because it kind of like, if it goes where you think it's going to go, it's kind of like, yeah, we've seen this a million times, you know, like we don't need to lead this much into the Batman fantasy of the soul. So, you know, like I was sort of happy about that, but yeah. Again, it's also a first film, you know, like I think that needs to be emphasized a lot here. And for a first film, it is quite successful. So I hope that this conversation has kind of spurred on some of that, the kind of situating it correctly in its cultural context for listeners of this podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, just sort of as a final thought on my end, I think I've said over sort of everything that I wanted to. This movie both kicks ass and has multiple poignant things it's trying to say. And that is something that doesn't always happen. And I'm always so excited when I get to see a movie that gets to, you know, ride that knife's edge and do it well. So obviously is a recommendation for me. Shiv, final thoughts before we wrap up here?
Go see it in theaters because numbers matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just a good, like, this is, as far as action movies go, there were multiple moments that had the entire audience that I was with just went, whoa, like, like, you get that feeling and that excitement in this movie. Particularly the one I keep playing back is, again, we're so deep in now, but it's a spoiler, when he goes back to fight to win money for the trans community that saved him, and the guy who kicks his ass in the first one, he just does one kick and drops him.
The size of that guy reminded me so much of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Game of Thrones.
Oh, is that the second guy though?
Yeah, it's super tall guy? One that he wins the fight with. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a real Kareem Abdul-Jabbar moment. I was like, oh, yeah, this is where this is going.
But like the moments like that are prevalent in this movie. And in a theater, I think you just get that energy and it's amazing. So it's definitely worth everyone's time. Well, this has been hopefully not the only podcast about the film Monkey Man. Shiv, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us and just vibing with our nonsense.
Of course. It's an honor to talk to you guys. Pleasure's all mine.
I have two questions for you to sort of wrap this up. One, could you give some top recommendations for Indian action cinema for someone like myself that would want to like start off with some of the greatest hits?
Yeah, this is so funny. I was going to do this regardless of you asking me. But
I got my notebook.
So there's one that hasn't come out yet. I saw it at a festival. It's called Kill, and you guys mentioned Raid. So I'm positive that you'll like it. It is a Hindi film, so it comes from Bollywood, and it is insane. It is one of the most visceral action movies India's ever made. It comes out in July in India, which means that it probably will have a release here. Lionsgate picked it up for distribution. So I'm very excited for it to hit theaters.
Okay.
And then the second is on Netflix. It's a Tamil film, which comes from the south of India. And it's called Jigarthanda Double X, J-I-G-A-R-T-H-A-N-D-A Double X. And it takes place in the 70s. It's like very Clint Eastwood inspired. It's kind of like this Western meets modern day action film. It's so badass. There are elements in it that you see in Monkey Man about, you know, indigenous people being displaced from their homes. A lot of environmental stuff about elephants, too, just because that's like a huge deal in India about conservation efforts. So I highly recommend that. It was on my top five of last year. And if you want a lot more, I talk about Indian films all the time on my page.
Well, this brings me to question two, which is where can folks find you and all of the things you do along with recommending wonderful cinema on the internet?
You can find me on TikTok and Instagram at chivalry_inc. That's chivalry spelled S-H-I-V-A-L-R-Y.
It's such a good tag. Like when I saw your handle, I was like, fuck, I got to step up my goddamn game. Like it's so good and catchy.
I suggested my wife should steal it just because she has a similar name. Yeah,
you can't steal it. It's entrenched.
Hey, they're not in the same industry. What are you going
to do? Okay. Shahir, when you are not monkeying around, where can folks find you?
You can find me promoting my wife's new business, chivalry.com. Now, you can find all of my works at my website, www.shahirdaud.com. That's S-H-A-H-A-R-D-A-U-D.com. Or my company, Suvanova, S-U-V-A-N-O-V-A.com. Matt, when you are, oh God, what are you doing this week? Yeah, unfortunately, I was about to say monkeying around, but I realized that's what you said about me. So let's say when you are riding a tuk-tuk through the streets of Astoria, Queens, where can people find you?
You can find me naming it after a different pop star over at my website, matthewcarroll.com, my life and works from like 12 years ago, or you can just check out the good works that hopefully we are doing over at Extra History and Extra Credits. I believe at this point, on Extra History, we are neck deep in our Secret Society series. We just released one on the Illuminati, and now I believe by the time this airs, we'll have our third episode on the Knights of the Golden Circle, and then the first one on the Cult of Mithras is out as well. And on the gaming side of things, we have an episode that is literally entitled Let NPCs Hook Up. And it's basically about how relationships in video games need to be more than prize mechanics. And one way that that can be effective is in stories in gaming. If other characters that are not the main character played by the player can also start relationships, and you could like talk to them about those relationships, because like that's a very real life sort of thing to do. Friends start dating someone and you talk to them and they're nervous and you do whatever. So like it shouldn't just be like, don't get me wrong, I love Baldur's Gate 3, but all those NPCs are thirsty as hell for me specifically. I want them to be thirsty for everyone else so it feels real and like a lived-in world, if that makes sense.
I have a very specific story about that, which I'm not going to get into here, but a friend of mine created an avatar of me in The Sims, which was, he was my best friend, I was his best friend, and in the game, we hooked up like all the time.
Oh,
for
you
some
have
reason.
Brought that up before.
and I was like, we were sitting on the couch watching our two characters make out, and I was like, this is great. I love it.
All right. It's tertiarily connected to the thing, but yeah, let's go.
I wasn't playing the game. That was the imaginary Shahir. It was just like hooking in,
In the game, then the PC character in The Sims would be like a godhead figure, like a just watching this happen.
I don't know. It was us watching it. It was the couch. It was a long time ago. Shout out to my buddy Luke.
Still hope
Shahir is still in his game. Shiv, next week we're saying next week, but we're actually going to be doing it right after this episode. We're recording another episode about Alex Garland's Civil War, which is a film about photojournalism. You are a photographer. I know you've seen the film as well. Any quick thoughts before we jump over to that episode?
Yeah, I loved it from the standpoint of a photographer. I think that the lens choices are something you should pay attention to on a second watch if you didn't on the first. And I think it's getting a lot of hate, but yeah. I want to talk about that.
Nice. I actually saw a double feature. I saw Monkey Man and then I saw Civil War right after, and I got home and my partner Jamie was like, how's the movies? I was like, excellent, but also 4.5 hours of brutality. And I was like, I don't know if I could do it anymore.
Well, you need to watch the new episode of Bluey to just
fun fact, if we ever start a Patreon, one of the rewards is going to be a sister podcast to this one called The Only Podcast About Bluey, because I do think it is one of the quintessential ways that humans have told stories in our time. It's weird and highly effective, and I think there's stuff to mill from it.
Shiv, just before we go, there's a weird thing that's happened in my house, which is that my son is equally waiting for this weekend, because that's the only time he gets to watch TV or movies, for two things. One is the digital release of Dune 2, and the other is the new half-hour episode of Bluey. So that is what we're doing this weekend.
Peak cinema, honestly.
Yeah.
Peak cinema. That's what he's
is Bingo the Kwisatz Haderach? Is that what we're sort of saying now, or yeah. No? Like, we don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Mum. Mum is the Kwisatz Haderach of
fair,
the
fair. Universe.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we've gone too far. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.